2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome back to the Cape Cod Pod. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. As always, alongside me, one of our college baseball analysts, Peter Flaherty. He's back live in the Cape. Pete, man, how's it going? How's the last week been? Now that you've returned from Omaha.
It's been excellent to kind of continue the college baseball season, so to speak. There has been a new influx of guys coming in from Omaha, coming in from super regionals. It's a little bit of a renewal of talent after the departures for the MLB draft, for the combine, Team USA, all kinds of variables now that the league has to deal with. So excited to be back. It's hard to believe that we're just about halfway through the season, but I'm sure that the second half will be just as exciting, if not more, than the first.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm out here actually in Seattle, Washington for the Futures game and the draft on Sunday. I'll be back on Monday, and there's no minor league games until Friday. So my plan is to get back down there Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, see some good games, see some players that I haven't seen before, which is, I feel like there's been a big influx of players since the week I was there. It was kind of the final week for a lot of these pre-draft guys. So it's kind of interesting to see some of the names that are popping up. We'll talk about a few today as we sort of roll through what's happened over the last week. As we always do, though, we always talk some standings here at the top of the show. Not a whole lot has changed. Gatewit's still the top team in the league, 15-7, and they have 30 points. They're followed in the West Division by Bourne, who's 12-9-1 with 25 points. Hyannis is just a 1 point above 500 at 10-10-1. Wareham Gateman are having a better year, I think, than they had last year. I know the record isn't great, but 9-11-2, Falmouth 8-12-2. I think that division is still very much up for grabs. I'm not going to count out Bourne. Certainly wouldn't count out Hyannis. Gatewit, you know, is obviously in a great spot. But I do think that the four teams below Gatewit, really, if somebody gets hot for a few games, it could shake out in a way that could be really interesting. I wouldn't count out any of these teams, though Falmouth has been down. They're a really talented squad, and they have some players we're going to talk about later today that have been really, really good. Any thoughts on the West Division there whatsoever? I know you're out there in the West seeing a lot of those games.
So I'm with you. I think that it is an extremely talented division top to bottom. Like you said, Gatewit's in a good spot with 30 points. They're up five on Bourne, who's the next closest team. But then outside of that, you know, Hyannis is right there, 9 points. You know, that's only 4.5 games back. And with so many head-to-head matchups against teams in the West, it's going to be pretty easy to make up ground if, you know, they get on a roll here. Falmouth, I have my eyes particularly on Bourne and Falmouth. Bourne, they're leading the league in hitting. They're hitting .283, I believe, and the next closest team is Falmouth at .255. They can really, really swing it, Bourne, obviously with Bender and Bodine, that dynamic duo from Coastal. And then they have a really good supporting cast with guys like Jonathan Bastine, Kendall Diggs, Garrett Michelle. They're you can't really take a pitch or a hitter off in that lineup. And then Falmouth, for my money's worth, they're the best lineup I've seen on this to this point on the Cape. And I know that the standings might be deceiving with that, but I think that they're really starting to hit their stride. And last night, I think I saw three top 100 college bats or college players in general, potentially four or five for next year's draft. Obviously with Travis Bezzana at the top, who I think, and I know he's a personal favorite of ours, but I think that if he plays shortstop for Oregon State and does what I think he's going to do with the bat, there's 1-1 upside. At the very least, he'll be in the conversation for it. Kyle DeBarge from Louisiana, they had him at third. I was very impressed with him. He sprays line drives all over the field, and I know we'll get into it later, but Falmouth, I think, is really going to – I think that they're about to explode. And then I worry just a little bit about Wareham. The trend is not their friend. They lost a lot of arms, and then offensively they're still pretty good, but I'm kind of looking at who these other teams are bringing in and as opposed to Wareham and who they might be losing. So I think that it's less so them being a bad team and more so you know, Falmouth is really going to start to hit its stride. Hyannis is a great team. Bourne's a really good team. And Katuit's up there at 30 points compared to just Wareham's 20. So the Gatemen, I think, have to pick it up. They got a key win last night. And then shifting focus out east, really nothing changed from our last podcast. It's still no. YD and Harwich jostling up at the top. And then Orleans and Bruce are right there. And then Chatham bringing up the rear. So really the same as last week in the east, YD with a little more separation over Harwich. But as it is every season, I think that the east is going to be, we're not going to know the division winner in the east probably until the last 2, 3, 4 days in the season.
And let's talk about this a little bit, because Chatham is the biggest brand in summer ball. I've had some people, I know we've said that before, but I've had some people even say that to me, you know, that they were a little shocked at how bad Chatham has been. We were discussing a little bit on run differential and just sort of where they are at this halfway point of the season. They're not going to set a record for the worst run differential. And we don't have the specific record, but I know if we go back to 2021 with Hyannis and 2019 with Hyannis, which were pretty difficult and tough teams, they both had run differentials by the end of the season that were above 100. Chatham is at negative 44 right now. And just to put this into perspective for our listeners, there are four other teams with a negative run differential as we are recording. Harwich is negative 3. Orleans is negative 3. Hyannis is negative 8 right now. And Wareham is negative 2. Combine those together, that is negative 16 from those four teams who have negative run differentials. And Chatham on their own laps them with a negative 44 run differential. They are 3-7 in their last 10. They are 6-13-1 overall this season. By far the lowest point total in the Cape Cod Baseball League. Where do we go from here with Chatham? Because it feels like there's been plenty of talent on this team over the last couple of years, but they have not met expectations, which is unfortunate because Chatham is a building that consistently fills up. They do a great job of merchandising. They do a great job in terms of game day operations. If you're going to go to a game with your family, it's one of the best parks in the Cape to go to see a game, particularly out there in the Eastern Division. Later games, too, so you can go have some dinner and then actually go to a baseball game afterward. You're just a fan staying there in Chatham. So there's a lot of positive stuff for the Chatham experience, but the team on the field, English is my first language. It hasn't necessarily been meeting expectations, and I don't know, where do we go from here? Because this team has been pretty bad.
I think that's a question that Coach Holliday is also trying to answer, because
sure,
they've struggled for the last 2 to 3 seasons for sure. And I think that we saw it last year with Hyannis, and how they were able to have a really excellent season. And obviously a lot of that is due to the talent on the field and the players that were brought in. But I think that the motto across the Cape League should be that continuity is key, because I think if you can get a group of 20 to 23 guys who, you know, once they get there are not going to leave for the summer, they can actually become a team, as opposed to Chatham, who this year and last, they've had an ample amount of talent. It's just they've had so many guys coming in and out, in and out, in and out. It's hard to not be 30 individuals as opposed to one unit of a team. So I think going forward, not just for Chatham and across the Cape League, and it's going to be a difficult trend to reverse or to shift. I think as far as adding draft eligible guys go, we've already seen teams stray away from it. I think that you got to, I think, just take all freshmen and sophomore, and with very few exceptions, you can add a draft guy who is very likely not to sign or is coming there with the intention not to sign.
Yep.
And is going to stick it out for the whole summer, because otherwise you're going to be looking at 3 to 4 really different teams throughout the summer. You'll have your pre-draft team, post-draft, USA, and then the portal is another variable. And if a guy enters the portal, from what I've seen on the Cape, if a guy enters the portal while he's up there, it's basically like he's going home for the draft or he's going to Team USA, because he's going to want to take visits. He's going to want to visit the schools. And then once he does all of that, he's not going to come back. So that adds a whole new element. And sometimes a lot of it is just the luck of the draw. Sometimes you get a really good crop of freshmen and sophomores. Not a lot of pitchers who are going to hit their innings limits. Not a lot of guys who enter the portal. You kind of thread the needle a little bit with getting really talented players, but not talented enough. Or that's poor phrasing. You get really talented players and you luck out with USA that they don't get picked to attend training camp. So some of it's luck of the draw, but I think for Chatham going forward, and I know Coach Holliday's addressed this, getting continuity on its roster is going to go a really long way, I think. And unfortunately, in 2023, we're already at the halfway point. It might be too far gone this year, but going forward next year and beyond, I think they got to shift their focus a little bit to getting to that 20 to 23, 25 guys, however many it is, to stick it out for the whole way.
And I know we talked about this off air, and I talked to Sean Campbell, the executive director of the MLB Draft League, last week with Matt Pajak on one of my other podcasts, 90th Percentile. But I do feel like some sort of ruling on draft eligible players that are truly like putting themselves out there to sign in the draft should go to the MLB Draft League. That should be where those guys head. You know, maybe you, and we've seen guys like, you know, we brought up a couple like Carlson Reed and Madigal Cotto, who were guys who were here last year. Madigal Cotto actually started the Cape League All-Star game for the West Division. Having maybe those guys here the prior summer and then pre-draft, if things don't go necessarily the way that they hoped or there was an injury or whatever, having them head to the MLB Draft League, I just think it's better. That's not to say every draft eligible player, because as you said, there are going to be players that don't sign. I use the example of Drew Conover off air, of a guy that, you know, ended up going back to Rutgers or whatever. Was he actually at Seton Hall and then transferred to Rutgers? Am I correct about
that?
Yeah,
so he entered the Cape League.
And then didn't sign.
Yep, exactly.
And he'll go a little bit higher this year. I think he was a 17th round pick of the Tigers or somewhere around there last year. Those guys are fine because they probably know ahead of time that I am not going to sign at the draft. There's some guys that it might be on the edge, but even with those guys that are on the edge, they get released in the draft league because they can't join the independent league. They're going to go back to school. They could sign with a Cape team, right? Because they would be a free agent more or less, because they wouldn't be locked into a contract with any CBL or Futures League or Northwoods or any of the ones that the Cape Cod League has that deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. I think to be eligible to play in the Cape League, you have to have at least 1 year of eligibility left in college, and then obviously to not be signed to another summer league, specifically and especially the Northwoods or the NECBL. And then if you fit in each of those criteria, you're good to go.
Yeah, and someone would sign them. We see guys come on in late July all the time as someone gets hurt and injured. I mean, whatever, it happens all the time. So I kind of wonder if that's maybe the better function, is not to have these guys out here pre-draft and just see how it works. Cause it seems like it's added another wrinkle of complication with right at the same time that everyone's still trying to figure out how to sort of manage the portal and all the questions that come with that. So it's a changing landscape in the Cape Cod League, but I do think there's still a lot of value for seeing these guys hit with wood bats and perform, et cetera. So really interesting stuff there. Let's get into some of the players though. Why don't we do that? We'll talk a little bit about Travis Benzana. I know that you saw him over the last couple of days, if I'm not mistaken, or at least a few times over the last handful of days, playing for Falmouth here, Oregon State player. Had he been an American, he's from Australia, and came over here after high school, one of the first true direct Australian prep players to go to a Power 5 baseball school. If he was American, he would be in the collegiate national team. I don't think there's much question about that. Love this guy. I've interviewed him, talked about him quite a bit. Absolute dirt dog. Incredible plate skills in terms of bat to ball skills, but also plate discipline and pitch, you know, recognition, just a really discerning eye, never really expands the zone. And he hits his strikes really hard, man, to steal a phrase from the Yankees. He does some damage. Somebody that's done a lot of work, actually was supposed to be in Falmouth last year, decided to sort of bang out on coming here to the Cape and spent the summer at Driveline working on bat speed. And it paid some dividends this year. with his team. So talk to me a little bit about Benzana and what you saw.
Yeah, I came in with really high expectations. I know he's a personal cheese ball of both myself and you. And I was blown away. I mean, it's an elite athlete. He moves really, really well. I'm surprised they actually haven't stuck him even in center yet, just to let him run around and let the athleticism really play. But I think he should, and hopefully play shortstop next spring for Oregon State. But in the box, I mean, he's in complete control. Regardless of the talent on the mound, he's in complete control of the box. Sees the ball really, really well out of the hand. Recognizes spin incredibly well, has some really, really advanced and mature takes at the plate. Even again, what I was very impressed by last night, and it's weird to say, but Katuit, I think they punted the game yesterday. They were getting smoked, but they punted the game. They threw a couple of position players, and Bazana got up. And in against a position player, especially in a summer ball setting, it's going to be really easy to kind of lock out and taking it bad off. But you would have thought it was the top of the first inning and he was leading off the game. Every single pitch he was engaged. Again, same super active takes. And I thought that just speaks to his makeup, and you know, he's a plus guy off the field, as you alluded to, but the bat speed is double plus. He's a really physical player. He's super explosive. There's impact there, both obviously with metal and with wood. And I mean, everything he hit was, I mean, he pulverizes the baseball to all parts of the yard and on a line. Posted multiple 100-mile-an-hour exit velos, and his home run off the bat, he thought he didn't even get it. He thought it was a miss hit. He kind of like said like a dang it or whatever it was as he was running out of the box. And it sailed over the fence. So it could not have been more blown away by Bazana. And I really like his swing. It's a really direct level path. Mm-hmm. Really gets into his lower half. And I was very blown away by him. And anytime I get the opportunity to catch him again, I'm going to be jumping at it.
Yeah. Quick and fluid. That's how I would describe that, that bat path as well. Here, let's put it into context for some of the listeners out there. We had two standout players last year that were similar sort of second base, and maybe they could play a little shortstop, but probably not. Profiles that both had big bats in Matt Shaw and Tommy Troy. How do you stack Benzana up against Troy and against Shaw? Both sort of relevant names right now because they're going to be going pretty early in the MLB draft on Sunday.
That's a great question. And that's a really tough one. Oh man.
Yeah. I totally put you on the spot here. It's funny. I think he's probably most similar to Shaw just because of the speed element of it and the things that he can do in the base paths. I think I like the bat a little bit more than I like Shaw's bat, left-handed hitter. I think there's probably, if it's not equal impact, Shaw maybe gets a slight tick there, maybe slight. I'd even have to look at the underlying exit velocity data numbers to be able to say that for sure. I do think Benzana has better plate skills, which says a lot.
Yeah, honestly, it would be by the skin of his teeth, but I'd probably take Benzana. I'd probably go Benzana, Troy, and then Shaw. Like you said, I like the Bazanas, love the Bazanas, a left-handed hitter. And then I think the approach is a separator with him. The swing decisions are outstanding. There was just another at bat, whereas against Rafe Schlesinger on Katuit, who, for those listening who are unfamiliar with Rafe, he's a low slot, borderline sidearm lefty pitcher, 91 to 94 with a really good slider.
Yep.
He threw the kitchen sink at Bazana. It was, you know, really good sliders on the other half, bust him in with a fastball.
Yeah.
All Bazana's
fastball runs a ton, and it's a tough arm angle on a lefty. Like it's
big time.
It's like Chris Sale kind of, but with a two seamer, you know, like
exactly. And all Bazana did was just spoil, and then a couple of really good spits. And I think he drew like a 9-pitch walk or the bat ended with him, you know, lacing a 103-mile-an-hour line drive to center field. So I take Bazana over the three over Troy and Shaw, but it is really close.
Awesome. Yeah. It was an interesting question to bring up. All right. Let's take a quick break here. We'll be right back in a moment.
I took 2 years of Spanish in high school. I took three more quarters of Spanish in college. And here I am. I work at a baseball publication, a baseball website, where speaking Spanish would be incredibly useful for my job. And I found that I don't retain almost any of it. But now I've got a different way to do this, a better way, with Babbel. Recently, I've been learning to speak Spanish with Babbel, and you can too. Because with Babbel, you can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. It's the second best way to learn a language. The best way is through immersion, where you live where the language is spoken natively and everyone's using it every day. But that's not possible for everyone. It's not possible for me. So what's the second best way to learn a language? Babbel, because you can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. I'm one of those 1 in 5. You can check it off this summer. Why Babbel? Because it works. Instead of paying hundreds of dollars for a private tutor or fooling yourself with language apps that are little more than games, Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. One of the things I love about it is it gives you the language in a variety of ways. You see it visually, you hear it, but the one that I like the most is Babbel's advanced speech recognition tells you if you're saying the words properly. And if you're not, it helps you. And that's key for me. With Babbel, you can learn everything you need to have real-world conversations, from vocabulary words to culture, and all it takes is 10 minutes a day. So try Babbel. Here's our special limited-time deal for our listeners to get you started right now. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our podcast listeners at babbel.com/BA. That's 55% off at babbel.com/BA. That's BABBEL.com/BA. Rules and restrictions may apply. Summer's here, and like probably a lot of you guys, we have a garden. And I love that ability to grow a tomato and basically pluck it from the vine and be eating it 20 minutes later. But our garden is very sporadic. And you probably have the same situation where you don't always have exactly what you want at the time you want it. Well, summer's here, and it's also a perfect time for HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, you get farm-fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. This summer, HelloFresh is here to take the work out of eating well. Reach your goals with delicious, calorie-smart, and protein-smart lunch and dinner options, plus new vegan recipes, too. You get farm-to-table quality with every HelloFresh box. HelloFresh's seasonal ingredients are picked at peak ripeness and travel from the farm to your doorstep in less than 7 days for fresh flavor in every bite, even when your garden doesn't provide it. I know that when I've cooked with HelloFresh, it is so easy that even I can do it. And trust me, if I can do it, I promise you, you can. HelloFresh gives the directions, gives you the exact ingredients, gives you the exact proportions to make a very, very good meal. Fresh, quick, and easy. Go to HelloFresh.com/16BA2023. That's 16BA2023 for 16 free meals plus free shipping. That's HelloFresh.com/16BA2023. B as in boy, A as in alpha, 2023. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit.
And we're back. All right, let's talk about a little history that is approaching potentially. It's a combination of a big power hitter who gets to play his home games at Red Wilson Field. That's Hunter Hines. We talked about this a little bit last week. I think we talked a little bit about it the week before, but we kind of discussed this specifically. You did a little digging. Hines looks like he is about to be the first player with double-digit home runs since Bobby Dalbec did so. Is it 2015 that Dalbec did that or 2014?
2015, and I was so surprised when looking up the stat. I mean, this is really like our weekly Hunter Hines segment.
Hunter Hines update.
It is crazy what he's doing in the Cape League, both this early in the season, I guess you could still say, and then also just the fact that barring something I think pretty unforeseen, will be the first player in 8 seasons to hit 10 home runs in the Cape League. And that says a lot given the talent that's come through here. I know you before the show mentioned what about Locklear and DeLauder? DeLauder and Locklear each got, they got held up at 9. So 9 seems to be a tough roadblock to clear. But Hines, I think is gonna, he'll leap over it, and he still leads the league with 27 RBIs in 21 games. I think he leads the league by a pretty decent margin. Grant Hussey's in second with 20. And then as far as the home run race goes, I think you can kind of say at this point he's running away with it, because he's got 8 and the next closest hitter has 3. So he hasn't quite clinched the home run champion crown yet. But I mean, I think it's very reasonable to say that he's going to be the home run king at the end of the year.
Yeah, it would seem like that is a foregone conclusion. But it surprised me. It surprised me that it's been, 8 seasons since somebody had double-digit home runs, or is it 7 because of the 2020 year? But either way, like, it's wild to me to think that it's been that long since someone's had double-digit home runs with all the players that have come through. I mean, we're talking about guys that I think have had double-digit major league home runs over that period that have played here for a full summer since then, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, there are guys who down here will hit 1 to 3 home runs. And I mean, the argument everyone loves is that Pete Alonso hit no home runs, and now everyone knows what Pete Alonso has done at the big league level. So it's not necessarily a harbinger of what's to come. But it's certainly very impressive what Hines is doing at this point. And I'm really curious to see if he can eclipse Dahlbeck's 12 home runs, which I think is going to be a really, really tough task, because he'll need, I mean, hey, he's on pace to do it, but he's still got to hit 5 more. And then if he gets 13 home runs, we'll have to do a little bit more digging to see when the last time someone hit 13 home runs was. But super impressive start for Hines.
Yeah.
Again, figures to be the centerpiece of Mississippi State's improved lineup next year. He already hit 20 home runs this spring, and again, profiles to be a 20, 25, maybe even 30 home run type hitter next year. So top 3 to 4 round draft talent in my mind, even with the first base profile.
Not bad, coach. I'd have to agree there. Pretty good stuff. So he's an interesting one. I actually haven't seen YD yet, so that's going to be one of the first teams I'm going to make sure I see, them in Harwich. So I'll check the schedule. If they're playing each other, that might be a nice little twofer that I can get out to one of those parks and get my first looks on both of those teams. But speaking of which, Harwich has, I think, a returning player, switch hitter Ethan Anderson from UVA. Heard some good things about him. I think he's had multi-hits in his first 2 games since returning when he was here prior to the collegiate national team, correct?
Yes.
Speaking out of turn there. Talk to me a little bit about Anderson, because he's somebody that I have not seen other than, you know, some UVA games on television this year.
Yeah, so I mean, I haven't seen the Ethan Anderson Harwich team yet. I saw Harwich really, honestly, 4 days ago, and I think it was the night before Anderson arrived. So a little annoyed at that, but I'll catch them a couple more times this year. But he was excellent this spring for Virginia. He hit .375 with 15 home runs and 26 doubles. Can really, really swing it. It's impressive bat speed. Impressive bat speed. Extends really well through the baseball. And it's legit impact. And we've seen it already, even with Wood. So I think it'll be easy to dream on the type of numbers he'd be able to put up in a full summer. But I think even with a little more than half of a summer, he's going to end up with a really impressive slash line as we close out the summer. And the profile is a little confusing because I think he's more of a first baseman than a catcher. Interested to see what they do with him, obviously, given the departure of Kyle Teal to the MLB draft. So I think that they might try him behind the plate, but it's a bat first guy. I'd give him probably, gosh, it might be an aggressive tool grade, but I'd give him 6 hit and probably 50, borderline 55 raw power. And I think, you know, he's already shown off the impact with the Wood. So a very fun player and a top 2 round pick in my eyes, at least, next summer.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm interested to see him. I've heard some good things. Let's talk about another player that I think you've mentioned off air, will make your top 100 college players for 2024. And that is Carter Matheson on Kitsuit. It's Ohio State. Is that correct?
Indiana, same
Indiana.
Conference.
I knew it was the right conference, right colors, kind of. Like there was, I knew his uniform, his hat is red.
Exactly.
Miss Lippy's car is blue. Billy likes milk. I'm kind of like, that's where my mind is right now. I think I just missed Matheson in the week that I was there. I think he either reported that day or a couple days after. So talk to me a little bit about Matheson and why you like him so much.
Yeah, so I mean, you look at his stats so far, he's hitting .343, only one extra base hit to his name. But if you get out and watch him play, especially in batting practice, it's a really, really good body. He's about 6'2", 210 or so, and he's absolutely chiseled. And he moves really, really well. They've had him out in center field after the departure of Brett Bateman, and he's been really impressive. He's got range into either gap, takes an outstanding route to the baseball, and he's got a plus throwing arm. So I think that I've been pleasantly surprised with how he's looked in center field. And if he can prove that he's a center fielder at the next level, which to this point he's proving that he can be, that's going to obviously help his stock mightily. And then shifting focus to the offensive profile. Again, you only see the one extra base hit, but you watch him take BP at his easy plus power, especially the pull side. Really easy backspin on the baseball, hits the ball in the air with authority. And then I think the plate discipline again has been probably most impressive. You'll see him kind of sell out 0-0 or in a really plus count on a fastball and kind of get a little long and swing and miss, but then he'll gather himself, get back within his approach, and I mean, really grind out at bats. You kind of see it with the 11 walks to 7 strikeouts, but the plate discipline is very impressive. Recognizes spin out of the hand really well. Doesn't get too far out on his front side. The takes are really good ones. It's not kind of like, you know, he gets buckled or guesses wrong on a pitch and it's kind of a lucky take. I mean, he's in control of the box. And I think, again, when looking towards 2024, and there's still half a summer here and obviously all of his college season, but I think he's, again, fits in that top 3 to 5 round range really well. And then obviously with the ability to play himself up, maybe even into a day one pick, if he can get into his power a little bit here and then really have a breakout year at Indiana. Cause he had a good year for the Hoosiers this year, hit over 300 with 10 home runs. But if he can get into that, you know, 15 to 20 home run range, which he can do. He hit 19 as a true freshman. If he can kind of put it all together with the approach and the power, and especially if he plays center field next spring, I think we're looking at a top, again, 2 to 4 round guy.
Interesting. Another player on that team that has been impressive, particularly with the power. There's a lot of impact there. Really interesting player is Cole Mathis of College of Charleston. Did I get the right college there? Was I actually correct?
Yes.
I didn't have it in front of me, and I was like, it's College of Charleston, isn't it? Because I'll like constantly get like those guys coming, like, is it College of Charleston or is it UNC Wilmington? Because I always feel like those are like the two mid-majors that Katuit always has like pretty good players from. But anyway, Cole Mathis hitting for some power. I believe he's a two-way guy as well, but much more heavily on the position and hitting side of things. But I know that he's been on the mound, I think, as well. So talk to me a little bit about Cole Mathis. He's an interesting player for 24 as well.
Yeah, super, super interesting player. And spoiler alert, he's also going to be on the top 100 college guys for 2024 after what he's done this summer. But it's a very interesting profile. He's got 3 home runs, which both leads Katuit, and then obviously way behind Hunter Hines is actually 2nd in the Cape League. Tied with probably like 12 other guys, I'd say, but tied for 2nd in the Cape League. It's a really easy swing, low effort, but it's just, you know, he backspins the ball to all parts of the field. Really good hand action, level swing. I like the approach. There's a little bit of swing and miss and a little bit of trouble with spin, but he hammers heaters and really punishes mistakes. And I think that the profile, it might be a little limited given that he's a right first baseman. I think that, you know, when looking at him play and looking at the actions and he's actually, I think, taken some reps over there, you could maybe move him over to third base. I think he does long-term end up at first, which again might limit his draft ceiling. But on the mound, he's also been reasonably impressive. Fastball up to 95. I think the calling card for him is his breaking ball. It's a really big, really big curveball with some teeth. So I know also data-wise, Mathis is a data darling, and I think that he screams kind of top five round draft pick next year. But to this point, he's been really impressive, and he's only helped himself with the summer that he's having.
100%. Definitely a really interesting player there, and somebody that I'm excited to follow over the next year. Good kid as well, you know. All right, let's wrap it up here. Tennessee and Tony V have been on a power recruiting trip out here in the Cape. They've signed at least three players that have been out here. Some have left. Ryan Galaney, correct? Right?
How yes.
Billy Amick, who is now home after being with Hyannis, Cannon Peebles. So three fairly big signings there for the Volunteers, all players that could really impact that offense next year in a big way. We saw all these guys put up really good numbers. So talk to me a little bit about that recruiting class for Tennessee. And I think days before Peebles and Galaney announced that they were going to be going to Tennessee, I saw Tony V there talking to him. So not a huge shock. Obviously based on a conversation, nothing wrong with that. So sort of interested in your thoughts on those three guys and the class that Tennessee is pulling in here in terms of transfers.
It's a pretty darn good class. And then obviously with Galaney, I think that he's probably going to get drafted in the first 10 to 12 rounds or so and sign, but still, if he doesn't get what he's looking for in the draft, having Tennessee as a quote unquote fallback option, or not even that, I don't even think you can call it that, but getting him to campus would obviously be a huge win. And then if they don't, fitting into that similar right corner infield profile is Billy Amick, the standout transfer from Clemson, and also was excellent for Hyannis in his time on the Cape. So a big get there. And then obviously with Peebles, they needed some catching help, particularly offensively. They needed a catcher with some thump, and Peebles fits that mold perfectly at 352 this year for NC State with 12 home runs. A little bit of a slow start in the Cape, but again, a player of his caliber, and just kind of watching him in the box lately and seeing his approach. And obviously for freshmen on the Cape, it is a really, I think it's the biggest time for some growing pains and for them to go through some struggles that they hadn't gone through at school. So he's experiencing that now, but I think that there's some light at the end of the tunnel for Mr. Peebles, who I think will get it going as we progress further through the summer. So an excellent haul for the Vols, both on the Cape and then just in general. They landed another key transfer yesterday with Dalton Bargo from Missouri, hit 280, is a true freshman with six doubles and five home runs, who is not on the Cape, but figured I'd mention it just because he fits into the conversation. And next year, he's absolutely going to be on the Cape somewhere. It's just a matter of where. So big summer for the Volunteers, who are looking to revamp and make another run at a national championship.
Yeah. You know, and obviously you're losing some talent this year as well. So should be an interesting thing to follow next year. And we got to see some of those guys out here. Anything else you want to touch on? Anything that's gone on in the league since you've been back from Omaha that we haven't discussed so far? Otherwise we can wrap this sucker up.
Yeah. I'm seeing him tonight, but I'm really excited to see Cam Smith from Hyannis. Third base, yeah. Freshman standout at Florida State, 6'3", 220, looks like a big leaguer. He's sophomore draft eligible, struggled a little bit at FSU with some swing and miss, especially on some spin. Didn't really have the season that I think many were expecting him to have after the fall season that he had entering the season with some really, really high expectations. But on the Cape, especially recently in the last week and a half, has really put it together. He has, I think, four multi-hit games in the last week or so. He's also hitting for power. The raw power and impact with Smith is probably his calling card, and he's really lived up to the hype in that aspect so far this summer with 10 extra base hits, which it's five doubles, a pair of triples, and three home runs, and he's really cut down on the swing and miss, and looks way, way, way more comfortable than he did even 3 weeks ago. So I'm excited to see the new and improved Cam Smith. Also on Hyannis, who I'm excited to see, is slash and dash specialist Nick Mitchell, who recently committed to Indiana out of the transfer portal from Western Illinois, was excellent for the Leathernecks, which is a great mascot. He was excellent for them this spring, had a really good summer in the Northwoods. Didn't quite work out in YD, but I think an excellent pickup by Hyannis with Mitchell. He's a problem causer up at the top of the lineup, and he wreaks havoc on the base paths. So those are two players I'm excited to see tonight, and then really night in and night out. There are multiple exciting players on any team. So that's about it for my side. And then also Bourne, I'll be catching in the next few days. And
nice.
And offensively, they are, I think, the best in the league. So talent everywhere you look.
And I will be back on the Cape on Tuesday, like I said. And so I'll be chasing some talent then as well. Be my first post-draft games, which is always kind of a good time as it kind of getting that second half of the season. So looking forward to that. And certainly if you're heading out to a game for the first time, haven't been out there, don't follow these rosters, and you listen to this podcast, feel free to reach out to Peter or myself on Twitter or wherever, email, et cetera, and ask us about some players. Happy to drop some names, some follows, et cetera. It's a fun experience, and I encourage you to get out there and take in some Cape games. But for Jeff, for Peter, this has been the Cape Cod Pod on Baseball America. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week.